for us. Hello, Jeremy.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you very much. How are you going?
Very well.
Very good. Now, let's have a look at what's happening with Google, getting into book printing.
Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, we tend to think of sort of Google as digitizing everything, making everything searchable, whether it's words or news or photos or videos. And they've got books.google.com going for some time, which allows you to search inside books, a little bit like the Amazon search inside a book. And you may have come across it either by accident or design. It's a great way, actually, to look inside a lot of books and find things that you may not necessarily find in the index or that you're too lazy to go to the library.
I've tried printing them off as well a couple of times. Unfortunately, they've disabled that function, haven't they?
That's right, yeah. Well, they of course, publishers aren't crazy about this. They're not sure what to do because on the one hand, it increases the visibility of their collection of books. On the other hand, it might almost certainly lead to people not thinking it's worth buying a book if they can read a large chunk of it online. But this development is slightly different. What they're doing is hooking up with a company called Online Books, which basically does something called print on demand. Print on demand has been around for a while. It makes it cheaper and possible for publishers to print individual or very small numbers of books. So Amazon usually have their warehouse right next to a print-on-demand factory, which would enable somebody to order a specific copy of a book and for Amazon not to have to go back to each individual publisher to get new supplies, but just send that order across the road. An individual copy is printed and then shipped off to the customer.
We also have Morris Misolowski with us in the studio. I'm just wondering, Morris, you're a business futurist. Do you think this augurs well? It's kind of like a reverse of a trend.
It is. Well, we're looking at just-in-time, really, is what we're talking about. And it's a philosophy that's been around for the last 20 or 30 years in car making. So I do think it's the future, though. I've talked about this also being in retail stores, that we're only going to see one sample garment in the store, and that'll be made just-in-time, which goes back to the old tailoring or bespoke days that we used to know. From an inventory viewpoint, it actually makes sense for a retailer to be able to do that and to make the garment just as you want, and the book's no different. What's interesting with this is it's the Justice Department in America that actually has some issue with it. Justice Department is talking about taking Google to court because no one's actually complained about Google doing it. No publisher has an issue with it, but Justice Department says maybe they might, so maybe we should do something about it.
That's very interesting that the publishers haven't made noise, but...
No one, but the government for some reason decides they should get involved.
Very interesting.
What is happening now, I think, is that Google is trying to sort of bypass this issue by just focusing on the free public domain books. Those books which are where the copyright has expired, nobody's making any claim to ownership. And they've got about 2 million of these things online. And they're hooking up with this outfit that just basically, it's an espresso machine type thing which prints out books. And it can do it in about 3 or 4 minutes. It costs $100,000, but the price is likely to fall. And what we're likely to see are people going into a bookshop, as Morris says, and just saying, I want a copy of this particular book, 1984 or whatever it is. And they'll go and get a cup of coffee and come back, and a beautiful library quality copy of the book will have been printed, bound with a nice cover.
But that does raise the issue again that sort of costs are being transferred to other people. It's like the idea of not getting a ticket from your airline. You can get an e-ticket, but that means that you're paying for the printed toner, you're paying for the paper. Who wins from these sorts of things, apart from the speed issue and the snazziness?
Good question. I think that in some ways what is happening is that people are recognizing that not everyone wants to read a book in a digital format. Last week or a couple of weeks ago we talked about these e-books, and I think that's great for a lot of people, but some people might just want to have a physical copy of a book, and they could do that at home, but it might not work so well. This works out relatively cheaply, so I suppose you're probably talking about $5 a book, which is certainly a lot less than...
That's a good deal.
...print copies that you're going to see in...
And it allows the retailer to sell a whole lot more inventory that they wouldn't have had before, because who wants to keep...
You don't have to worry about transportation.
But who wants to keep 5 copies of something that sells, you know, twice a year? But if you've got in a catalogue and it just prints off, you can sell it all year round if you want.
You'd save on rent as well, wouldn't you? You just need a much smaller space.
And the larger chains like Borders are actually looking at putting together kiosks, really small retail footprints to do exactly that. And in fact, not even have having a kiosk with a retail footprint that is just a machine.
Jeremy, let's just have a look at the social networks. We've only got a couple of seconds, unfortunately. It's been a very tight day today, but social networks replacing email. That's a real futurist thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. This is interesting, and figures are now beginning to emerge that this is indeed the case. It's often said that young people just don't use email for anything other than a very formal kind of communication. Younger people will use instant messaging, texting, Facebook, MySpace, this kind of thing. But the figures are now beginning to come in which seem to support this idea. Online Publishers Association has come out. They started doing this collecting data in about 2003, and now they're comparing their figures of 2003 with 2009. And although Facebook, etc., weren't really around then, or at least they weren't monitoring them, what seems to be happening is that people are spending more time on content and community than they are on communications. In other words, they're reading news websites or spending time on Facebook and less time on what they would call communications, which would be email or instant messaging and things like that.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there, Jeremy Wangstall. Thanks so much for joining us from Singapore. Speak to you again soon on Radio Australia Today. That's Jeremy Wagstaff, who keeps a blog at loosewireblog.com. And this is Radio Australia Today.
I like how the way you punctuate everything. It's
look, you know,
lovely.
It's all about the punk. And speaking of which, Matt Conway's walked in with the headlines. Take it away.
Thank you so kindly. Australia's Prime Minister Kevin Rudd says the shooting of Indonesia's most wanted militant was a step forward in the right direction against regional extremism. Indonesia's most wanted man, Malaysian-born Norden Muhammad Top, was killed in a police raid yesterday. Mr. Rudd said the comments while cautioning Jakarta against relaxing the struggle. Authorities in Papua New Guinea have released an interim report into the plane crash that killed 13 people, including 9 Australians near Kokoda last month. The report only outlined the factual circumstances surrounding the crash and doesn't identify a cause. It says the last communication received from the airline's PNG flight was a message from the pilot, Janine Moala, saying she'd begun her descent into Kokoda. And the South African government has complained to the United Nations about the treatment of world champion athlete Caster Semenya. Semenya was ordered to have gender testing after winning the women's 800 metres final at the recent world championships. South Africa's Minister for Women has lodged the complaint on behalf of the athlete. So that's the news for now. Back with more news in half an hour.
Thank you so much, Matt Conway from the news desk.
Doing the weather rounds now, and starting with Marlene the Maldives, we'll just do today's weather. 31 degrees today, a small chance of rain tonight. If you're in Dili, a top of 27 degrees, it is fine all day. Can't say the same for the weekend. Beijing, 29 degrees, clear for most of today. If you're in Singapore, 28 degrees today, 50% chance of thunder showers. Kuala Lumpur, 33 degrees, thunderstorms have started. It looks like you could expect some thunderstorms tonight as well.
Yes, indeed. And in Cambodia, Phnom Penh, we've got a chance of thunder showers, cloudy periods, and a top of 34 in Siem Reap. Chance of thunderstorms across the weekend, 33 Vientiane. Thunderstorms as well across the weekend and 35. Denpasar, it's a wet one for you right through to Sunday and 30. Port Moresby, you can expect also a rainy time. Well, there's a chance of it anyway, right through to Sunday and 30. Lay, it's also going to be a wet time and 28.
If you're in Honiara, today 30 degrees, a chance of thunderstorms. Port Vila, clear, 23. Rarotonga, 25 degrees is what you've just hit. Small chance of rain today. If you are in Niue, 28 degrees, a small chance of rain. In Apia, 28 degrees, raining already, could become thunder showery. If you're in Saipan, thunder showers for most of today, a top of 31.
In Suva, Fiji, it's going to be a clear one over the weekend, a bit wet at the moment. Nuku'alofa, it's a bit sort of fair and cloudy, but 24 is your temperature, and Tarawa, Kiribati. Chance of thunderstorms through to Saturday and overcast on Sunday with 32 your top. Now, unless the climate change debate is framed around people and not economics, people in developing nations will be pushed further into poverty. It's a slight change of tack, but this is the view of Andrew Hewitt, the Executive Director of Oxfam Australia, and he's on the line right now. Welcome to Radio Australia Today, Andrew.
It's a pleasure, thank you.
Could you explain this?
Well, what we're saying is that the deepest ethical issue that's been raised by the climate change debate is that the people least responsible for the crisis, people who have the fewest resources to cope with the crisis, are being hit the hardest. It's people living in poverty in developing countries right around the globe who are at the front line of the climate change crisis. And we need to start to put their interests, their needs, their concerns at the centre of the climate change debate.
So which countries are we talking about? Pacific countries, Maldives?
Really across the board. In different ways, communities are being affected by climate change. In some parts of the world, it's because they're relatively low-lying. Say for our parts of the Pacific, lands are already being lost or being ruined as a result of rising sea levels. In other areas, it's what we're seeing is much more volatile and intense weather patterns, which is leading to an increase in the number of climate-related natural disasters. Oxfam, for instance, has calculated that currently something like 250 million people globally are affected by climate-related disasters. It's our estimate by the year 2015 that number will increase to 375 million people.
Now, we've got the Copenhagen Climate Change Conference coming up in December. It's not too far away. Is this a last chance to get things right, to get everybody reading off the same page of the book, to use the cliche?
It may not be the last chance, but it's our best chance. And it's the best chance of getting the whole world's community focused on what really matters. What really matters is finding a way to forge a comprehensive, equitable and effective deal. That means tackling emissions. The most effective thing we can do about climate change is to reduce emissions early and significantly. And that places a particular responsibility on the rich countries, on the big polluters, countries like Australia. Australia is on a per capita basis one of the world's worst polluters.
But, and you also say that the Australians aren't making the connection between climate change and poverty.
No, it's improving. People are starting to see the linkages. We're starting to get the voices of people from developing countries, particularly from the Pacific, into the debate in Australia. But still there is this sense of a disconnect. There's the people who see the arguments about climate change and disconnect those from arguments about poverty and inequality. And what we've got to do, and one of the challenges for an organisation like Oxfam, is to really make those connections real and living.
Okay, thank you very much, Andrew Hewitt, the Executive Director of Oxfam Australia. Thanks for coming on to Radio Australia today. So do keep an eye on that. And Lane.
Zulfikar, today's word of the day, we haven't gone through quite yet. Diatribe is today's word, and Maurice Misolowski is still with us, and we're going to be talking more tech in just a short while when we cross to Hong Kong with Phil Whelan in RTHK.
They're ready and waiting.
I've heard,
what
but they just have to wait.
What a wonderful world diatribe is.
Diatribe, I know, it's one of those things, but funnily enough, I thought this would get more entries because I think it's not too difficult, but we've got two entries, and they're both submitted entries that are sort of going on the same vein. So you choose. Uh-huh. You get to choose who wins the Word of the Day prize. Okay, entry number one, diatribe. That's a group of people who get together and decide to eat less. A diet tribe.
Okay.
And the second entry that we have got says, oh no, now we do have three entries.
You don't mind just eat a piece of chocolate, do you?
Actually, I'm quite hungry. I wouldn't
only if you share.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I'm not sharing my chocolate.
I'm sorry, if you bring it up, that's what you have to do. It's rude otherwise.
All right, yeah.
Second entry, that's a tribe on diet before an eating competition.
Okay.
Diet tribe, so they're both going to this diet thing. And the third entry says, that rhymes with a radio station here we have in Port Moresby called The Tribe. So I'm not sure if that's an official entry. But anyway, choose between all those three.
Drum roll. I'd give it... Oh, and they did. I'd give it to number one.
Number one. That goes to Kimmy. That's
number one.
Number one.
The group of people who get together and decide to eat less. A diet tribe. Now, I don't see any sense in that. But anyway, some people do it. Kimmy, congratulations. You win the word of the day today. Today, I'm fumbling all over my words, but it means a bitter verbal attack. No such thing here on Radio Australia today.
No.
Oh, it's early.
It's early too. No. We still have time, don't we?
Yeah.
20 minutes to
Jeremy's
go.
Still coming.
Veracity is tomorrow's word. That is spelled V for Victor,
Mondays.
E for Echo. Monday, correct. Thank you. I'll start again. V for Victor, E for Echo, R for Romeo, A for Alpha, C for Charlie, I for India, T for Tango, and Y for Yankee. Veracity. Today at radioaustralia.net.au, or you can SMS.
You can indeed. To country code 61427 727272.
I'm so hungry. Can I have some chocolate, please?
Yeah, look, I'll pass this over, because I've been gagging to do this all day. I'm going to play a little bit of music before for 20 seconds.
Thank you. Do I really get to eat this?
Of course you do.
Smells good.
We're going to go to RTHK just around now.
Can I share some with Morris?
That's right. yeah, that was it. I just had to play that, you know, because I was just feeling, you know, in need of
and
it.
And I just had to eat that.
Yeah, good. So, no, that's good.
Strange
so.
Things going on.
Have we got Phil Whelan on the line?
Hello.
Hello.
Sorry to disturb you.
Oh, no, please. Can I play some more music?
Let's go. 20 seconds. That's a rip. What do you got? Oh, yeah.
It's a bit rough, really, but, you know.
That's awesome. Is it you?
No.
It is.
It's a man called Two Fingers, Mr. Two Fingers.
Right, I played some music yesterday. I was doing a presentation. I always have some opening music.
Disc jockey.
Oh, yes. I mean, you can really imagine it. And for the first time ever, I've played this music for 10 years. It was actually chosen by a psychologist for me to get an audience up and going before.
Right. So you do these seminars.
So it's an upbeat piece of music I play before I go on stage to get people in the mood to listen to my diatribe.
I believe today is a Kafka lude-free day.
Oh, yes, it is indeed.
I think we've got five Kafka lude-free weeks.
We've been a little bit rude. Yes, hello. It's all
who's the bloke in the corner?
Huh? Well, where's the corner? I'm lost now.
I thought it was us.
We sent you a note.
Did you?
See, what's the point of emails?
See, emails are dead.
If you don't
read them. Exactly. Go to your Facebook.
Oh, they're going to start on Facebook now.
Yeah. No notes.
Except Phil's probably staring more at his cup of coffee.
Yeah. I would be if I had it. But it is coming, apparently, which is awesome. Great way to start Friday. By the way, boys, I'm talking to Mr. Canada in 20 minutes, so make it quick, please.
Come on.
Okay. Well, how about we take up the Facebook issue for just a moment? They are to be congratulated.
By the way, guys, say hello, because, you know, our microphones are a bit crummy and we can't see who's over there.
No, absolutely. We've got Morris Misilovsky here, who's our business futurist.
Hello.
Hello. My name is Zulfikar Abani, and that's very rude to go to me next, but, of course, not leastly, is Adeline Ung. And we've got a couple of other people around here, Nadia and Sally. And Phil Whelan, that's you, isn't it?
You've got a bloke called Phil Whelan. Amazing.
Yeah. He's apparently going to be joining you in a moment.
Oh, awesome. Excellent.
Yeah, in Hong Kong. Yeah.
There is a light at the end of the tunnel. What's your Facebook news?
So my Facebook news is a couple of things. First of all, Facebook deserves to be congratulated. I think they now have 300 million active users per month.
Whoop.
As of yesterday. 300 million people on that thing every month.
Hands up, those of us who are among that 300 million.
Oh, yes. Hands up.
Loads of people are, but a lot of people have shifted their life into Facebook.
They have.
And not just for fun. It's like the normal, the real day-to-day stuff isn't...
New world order.
Not existing, is it?
They've given up their life.
I've had about 300 million people try to get me onto Facebook, but I refuse.
You're not on Facebook.
No.
There's a challenge.
Now, tell us why you're not on Facebook.
And why haven't you added me?
I can't find you. That's why I haven't added you.
Nothing personal.
That's fair, actually. that seems to be the comment these days, and you haven't added me.
No, I know, but people get a little bit offended, you know, I'm worried, you know, when you get these invitations to join this or that, you know, whether it's Yahoo, blah, 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 or Facebook, this and that, and you go, well, do you decline or accept? If you decline, do they send a message to the people who say, no, they didn't want you?
They do.
No,
apparently. They do, and they get to they get a group of people out there, and they've all got baseball bats.
Good.
No, the answer is nobody knows that you ignore them.
MSN these days
they get absolutely no message about it whatsoever.
Says, don't worry, we won't tell them you said no or something.
Oh, good. But the group of 50 million people, or was it, no, was it 300
million?
300
million. It is a milestone.
And the other thing, which I think is even more impressive from a business viewpoint, which is where I come from, is that Facebook has announced as of this morning that they are now revenue positive.
Which
they,
means
they are in fact making a heap of money.
From
meaning
ads,
those rumours about
everything.
Rumours about wanting to charge people are actually rubbish.
Well, yeah, they'll never charge people. They don't
no
need
way.
To. No, they don't need to. They might charge them for premium product, but not for the base product. You know, they claim that Facebook now is worth somewhere between $6 and $10 billion as a company. It'll float in the next 3 years, is the guess. But they're making $125 million from brand ads.
Yeah.
$150 million from ad deals with Microsoft alone. Pays them every year. $75 million. This is interesting. From virtual goods, which is things that you buy. You know, you might buy a cup of coffee or some flowers, virtual flowers or coffee, and send it to a friend on Facebook. Those kinds of things.
Ridiculous.
Absolutely. I am with you 100%. But there's 75 million reasons why it's not. And $200 million they make from the ads on the side. So
that is amazing.
And they have been around for 3 years. Turning over that kind of money, and they are that
step.
Turning over that kind of money, and they
we're
are.
We're hearing a bit of echo back to us. I don't know what's going on there, but
a bit of echo back to us.
And we really, as much as despite what people believe, we don't really enjoy hearing ourselves back.
No, it's quite
it's quite
interesting.
It's a little bit disconcerting. But the next step is on Facebook.
Is this my fault?
Sorry, it's probably your fault.
No, I didn't take the medication.
Okay, it's all whatever it is.
Or too much.
Everyone, take a deep breath.
Hey, listen. Whatever you've just pushed. Unpush it, because I am echoing like a very echoey
person. So it's transferred from us to you. This is good.
Do you remember Nadia?
It's viral.
Do you remember Nadia, who I mentioned just a second ago?
Well, that's okay.
Oh, no. She's working on it.
What have you done? Stop it.
No! It's your fault, Phil. Not at our end.
Anything.
Look, you know, contrary to the commonly held belief, it isn't me, it's you.
So, on this note,
yes.
How about we talk about Twitter?
Ooh.
Oh, yes. Well, look, let's talk about
but
Twitter and Facebook
we
before
go to,
we go
let's go. Before we go to Twitter, this Facebook thing, there is a next step. You can do like a Skype on a Facebook.
You're going to. Up? What they're going to do now is they're talking about bringing a chat room into it, and the chat room is with Skype-esque. So, with Facebook, what it is now, I've just gone dead silent. What it is now is basically what it won't be in 2 or 3 years. They're turning it into a full-blown search engine, and they're trying to make it the portal that everyone goes to first off when they jump online.
So Facebook will be a Skype and a Google and...
And a Twitter and whatever else they can put into it. So
can you do that successfully?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because they've got the community. They've got the volume of people that are
in there.
So they can begin to build product into there that people are buying. So certainly I think Facebook will achieve its aims. Yeah, and look how far they've come in 3 years.
We're still hearing, we're back to hearing ourselves back, but we're just going to ignore ourselves now.
We are. I know how other people feel now, just trying to ignore me.
You've given us the virus, you've passed the virus back to us, Phil.
Phil, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good.
Oh, good. And I'm not echoing. It was more fun when I did.
See, we should be doing this.
This is great radio going here.
Oh, who brought Monster Magnet into the studio? I'm going out of my mind.
I think this is perfect then for our next story. It says that Twitter is used by twits and Facebook users are clever. Is a part of a research piece that came out last week. What this lady is claiming, and I think it's wonderfully incredible and naive in many ways, is because Twitter is so short and so fast, it requires basically twits or morons to be able to use it because there's no thinking involved. Whereas Facebook is a more considered approach and it takes you a minute or two to type your response, therefore you must be a smarter person.
Be kind to this person who came out to say these things, because she's actually a friend of mine.
Oh, okay. I take it all back, not.
But it is interesting because she's attracted some criticism from other bloggers who have been saying, well, sometimes, you haven't taken into account, Twitter sometimes leads you onto a very deep and meaningful research site, for example.
Yes. And I actually find the opposite. I think Twitter is a wonderful tool because it makes you think about your message and bring it down to 140 characters. When I talk to corporates, I actually ask them to consider that their message is very long and verbose. It's a diatribe, to use that word from earlier. How can you make it short? And 140 characters forces you to do it. I think it's perfect for that if it's used for niceness.
I guess I can see sort of the author, I guess you can call it, of that report, quote unquote.
Mm.
I can see her point of view, as in, you know, you're not having to think sometimes. If you're just saying, see you later, or see you, you know, if you dumb down those things. But I can also see your point, which is saying it's forcing you to edit, and that sometimes takes more thought.
Yes, and I think that's an incredible tool to have, and it comes back to the user too. It's how the user uses it.
should be used for niceness, as I say often.
Phil's awfully quiet.
Maybe you can't hear me.
Hello.
Hello. They can't hear me.
No, we can.
Can you hear you? Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, yes.
I just said, do you know why it's 140? Somebody's having a laugh this morning.
I reckon so.
Somebody is definitely having a laugh.
I don't think the mice are pedalling fast enough in the studio to get the things going.
It's a little bit better. Put some more coke in the boiler or something over here. Why is it 140 characters? That's what I was trying to say.
Why is it 140?
Why is Twitter 140 characters? Because it was borrowed from SMS, which is 160 characters, and they thought I'd make it shorter.
Okay.
That's the non-technical reason for it.
Was there any reason why SMS was 160?
I think only because the technology at the time that they invented it, invented SMS would only allow it to be 160 characters to be carried across. Cool. So it certainly could be changed now.
Just wanted to clear that up.
Oh, yeah, well, thanks very much.
You got it off your chest, finally.
I did. I feel much better.
Much better.
So, I mean, Phil, you got any contributions to make yourself?
No, not really. No. What would you like?
I don't know. Whatever.
I can make you a cup of coffee.
Yeah, all right.
Coffee would be good. How about we talk about some of the jobs of the future?
Go on in.
So, we've talked, I mean, you know, we all know about patent attorneys, we know about lawyers and all those kinds of jobs that we have now, and they're terrific jobs, but I've been playing around for the last few weeks with a couple of people trying to work out what tomorrow's jobs are, and some of them really tickle my fancy. Yeah. One of them is called the telemedicine technician. What does a telemedicine technician do, Phil?
You're the boffin. You tell me.
We have a hand up here.
Yes. Do I have the floor?
Yes.
I imagine that is somebody, you hook up with them over a telephone or a television, and they diagnose you. From a distance.
Hey, it's halfway there. Telemedicine technicians certainly would use those kind of tools. So we're talking about medicine about 5-10 years from now, where we'll be able to have a doctor in one place and he'll be able to use technology to be able to diagnose and talk to patients right around the world. So there will be a time where we'll be able to have specialists who are not regional based anymore.
Have you seen that table thing?
That table thing.
Yeah, I can't really put much more of a spin on it. It's like the doctor has like a glass top coffee table thing, and there's all these various. It's a screen and it has your record on it, and he drags something over, and if another doctor's supposed to see you, it goes, and you sit around the table and you can see exactly what's going on. It's rather scary, really.
It's really interesting. I actually have a version of that on my website, which is businessfuturist.com, under Insights, if you want to have a look at it. It's a 5-minute piece, which is exactly what you've just described. So that world is going to be incredible when we get there from a medical viewpoint, but it also opens up, which is what I like the most about it, it opens up the opportunity for everybody to have good medical representation instead of just the West. Because really we can take a great doctor from anywhere in the world and we can use their skills and talents anywhere else in the world.
So this is being done by remote, so you would have a local doctor, wouldn't you, trying to follow the instructions as best can?
You may or may not, depending on what it is. Certainly for something that was a bit more serious, you might. But for minor ailments, you know, for the things you might go to a general practitioner for, you might not need a doctor at the other end. I'm working with a client at the moment who I've been working with for a couple of years who is also looking at putting in portable vending machines. And the vending machine is with prescriptions, so it actually has tablets in it. So it's like an ATM machine that you would go to. They can put it into a third world country, for instance, which is where they've got the grant.
It would
get
knocked off in an instant, wouldn't it?
Well, it would, but they're talking about security, and they're talking about very much like a bank of burying it somewhere and putting it in cement. I mean, you're absolutely right, Phil. That's the issue that they've got now. But the technology to make it happen works, and the technology to dispense tablets out of it remotely works. But you're absolutely right. The problem is it'll get knocked off in a second. So what do we do? Technology is ready, but the population's not yet.
And I wonder if doctors are ready, because they still like to be up close and personal with the patients, bit of the old hands-on action, not too much, or they go to prison, but you know what I'm talking about.
I do. But so I think that's something that we're going to work towards, and we'll see a lot more of them. And my other favourite one, in fact, perhaps one of my most favourite ones, is a transhumanist designer. Transhumanist designer.
Don't you want me, baby?
That strikes the imagination or inspires the imagination. Best we leave it to you to describe what that actually is.
So a transhumanist designer is somebody that is going to be working with robots and people in the workforce. It's a human resource role, and they're going to be working out what's best done by machines.
Human resource people were robots already.
Well,
I guess I didn't get that email.
Yeah, that'd be kind to them.
Oh, I can't tell.
touch that one. So it's something that we'll look at what needs to be done in an organisation, figure out if it's best done by a robot or a piece of machine, and if not, maybe best done by a person, and then work on the job descriptions and the skill sets for both of them and make sure that what needs to be done is done by either or.
What would a robot, I mean, this is a, what would a robot do in your, you know, opinion? That's the word.
Now, we need to get away from, ooh, somebody just got sparked. This studio's a bit strange today. Going back to your question anyway. So a robot, you know, we need to remember that robots are around now in manufacturing. So for me, a robot's not the Daleks. It's not the R2-D2 type robot. It's really a machine that does one, two, or a number of tasks, and it does them repetitively. That's what I think we're going to see.
All right, so you're looking at really boring.
So exactly, the boring, mundane things that most of us don't want to do. So in a manufacturing plant, going back to our cars, people don't really want to stand there welding all day, so robots are much better
at it. Or reverse parking. There's now a car that can reverse park for you.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we can't mention it, but that Japanese
brand. But what about robots in more more responsible positions? Is that what you're getting at here?
I'm not sure that we're going to see that for a while, because I don't think we as a people are ready for it, but we certainly can do it. There's some interesting work going on now around making robots more human-like and trying to make them understand the notions behind the words and
the
implications.
I bet the leading researchers are in Japan.
And they are, you're quite right. And there's a story in the last couple of weeks about a baby robot. A little baby robot.
Why?
Because that's what they're calling it. And they're saying that they're trying to teach it. They claim it has the intelligence of an average three-year-old. In other words, it can discern its environment up to about what a three-year-old would be able to do.
But what would somebody use a baby robot for?
It wouldn't, but it's the precursor of what might come afterwards, because they're trying to give it that artificial intelligence that we're all after. So you don't have to teach it very much. It knows by its environment and by the people around it and what's happening, what it needs to do next.
Would you use it to learn how to, you know, take care of babies and stuff?
It would be interesting. In this case, not. In this case, they're just using the euphemism of the word baby because it has the intelligence of a three-year-old.
Yeah, good about that, because I'm imagining once you get onto the real thing, you stuff a can of three in one up its nose when it starts squeaking. It's not really going to be the best thing to do.
Changing its nappies wouldn't be fun either.
Absolutely.
Well, I wonder what would come out of it.
Oh.
Sorry.
I'm not going there, because I know what I'm having to deal what comes out of babies.
Oh, that's right. A newish father.
Well, that's something a robot could do.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. No, it's great. You know, he's
What's it like? Seriously.
No, it is good. What's it is like? Good, because I live in the, I sleep in the living room, so that's one positive aspect. what can you say? I mean, for some reason, you know, when it's your own baby, excrement suddenly doesn't smell anymore. Mm. When they sneeze in your face and get gloop all over your eyelids, you don't care for some reason. I think it's great.
You're getting better, improve your vision.
Oh, you're making it sound so attractive.
I don't think it's the be all and end all. I don't think it makes you a full human being.
Oh, what a rubbish father. Did you just hear that? Crummy father. You don't deserve to have kids the likes of you.
You said we didn't.
I used to talk to people who would say it didn't matter what we spoke about, whether it was the economy or fruit bats or whatever, he used to say to me, you don't have kids, so you don't understand.
Oh, please.
Stop
smoking. It's bad for you. Oh, really?
What, kids
didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that, no! Until I gave up.
How silly of me not to know it's bad for... I know what you're getting at.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why I just think it's a bit weird. But anyway, you know, it's lovely. Thank you.
A quickie for any of your listeners. We've got the Aussie Film Festival going on. It started last night. Lots of hot films from Australia, so good on you.
Oh, excellent. Wow. What's the big feature?
Yeah, what's on?
Was it called Razzmatazz? No, Razzle Dazzle. A new film about showbiz and stuff. It was premiered last night here, and this goes on for the next few days. I just thought I'd give them a plug, because they're really good guys, and they've got some top Aussie films happening. But I finish now.
Thank you very much.
I haven't actually seen that particular movie, but thank you for bringing that up.
Anytime. It's time to go for a cup of coffee, actually.
I think you're right, go to the...
We'll catch up again next week.
Yes.
Take care, guys. See you later.
Phil Whelan, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
That's Phil Whelan at RTHK. See, even he got some music in there. Just for the second, before it gets too late, feast your ears around this.
Join us for The World Today.
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Jackson. On the program today, how will Australia handle the challenge of an ageing population? The genteel sport of lawn bowls faces allegations of match fixing in New Zealand. And more hurdles for Burma's incarcerated opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi, who won't be allowed in court for her appeal against the latest extension of her home detention.
There's really no justification for it. That unfortunately just reaffirms the arbitrary nature of the proceeding in the the appeals court because there is no real rule of law in Burma, and that the junta itself provides clear instructions to the judges on how to rule in these cases.
More than the headlines, The World Today, coming up after the news on Radio Australia.
Radio Australia Today with Zulfika Abani and Adeline Ng. We hope that you've enjoyed time with us this particular week. We'll do it all over again next week, and also we'll do it all over again with Maurice Misalowski, who is our business futurist. And more details on your website. You've got a new one, haven't you?
Oh, just a new URL. Well, business. It's at businessfuturist.com.
Simple as that.
It's as simple as that. Have a great week, everyone. Catch you next Friday.
You too.
Thank you. I'm just looking at your old web address here. Yeah, that. Yeah.
Oh, it was 10 foot long.
Yeah, cool.
Nice. Tomorrow's, not tomorrow, I keep saying that. Monday's word of the day is veracity. That's V for Victor, E for Echo, R for Romeo, A for Alpha, C for Charlie, I for India, T for Tango, Y for Yankee. Veracity.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for joining us on Radio Australia Today. And you know what? Just because I really wanted to play this earlier, I'm going to play another 2 seconds of this and then we're going to go.
Okay.
Police are coming. I ain't running, I ain't done shit. Police are coming.
I just love that. Radio Australia Today, stay tuned for the news. We'll be back. See ya.
Cheerio.
Bye.
It's midday in Portmore's.